Good morning and welcome to Backchat. I'm Hugh Chiverton, your co-host today, Ada Wong. Ada, good morning to you.
Good morning, Hugh.
We're talking today about national security legislation and business. Carrie Lam said yesterday that Hong Kong's impending national security legislation will be very effective in restoring business confidence and helping the local economy bounce back. But the EU warned yesterday, as we've been hearing in the news there, that it would face very negative consequences if it presses ahead with the law. And a senior Chinese financial regulator said China must prepare for the risk of being cut off from the US dollar payment system in case the United States sanctions Chinese companies and banks. Do you agree with the chief executive? Will the business environment be better? Will it be worse or much the same after the enactment of the law? Will the EU, G7 and US actually risk trade with China? Let us know your thoughts. You can leave a message on our Facebook page, Backchat and RTHK Radio 3. You can email us, backchat@rthk.hk, or you can give us a call. Our number is 233-88266, 233-88266. Joining us for our first part of the discussion we have with us now, David Webb, Chief Editor of website.com, and Felix Chung of the Liberal Party. Later, we're going to be joined by MPC Deputy Whitman Hung. Once again, our telephone number is 233-88266. Just before we kick off, some emails on other topics that have came in. I think this was from actually from yesterday. Matthew says, correspondent Herman, who's another regular contributor. Herman sounded very sensitive about the suggestion that Backchat correspondents' identities be authenticated. I wonder if he has the same vocal opposition to the CCP's social credit system, which basically tracks everything mainland people say and do, both on and offline. Herman, for or against? That is from Matthew. Richard says, on the subject of writing in, does anyone here approve of policemen writing into this programme on police pay in favour of police and the establishment? I need not even mention his name. We all know who he is from his multiple daily letters and from his strong reaction to the IPCC report. Some other wag mentioned we should give him his own programme. So prolific was his daily effort. Your tax dollars are paying for this service, folks. That comes from Richard. And Bowen says, I just want to extend my warmest and best wishes to David Webb, having recently heard about his health condition. We know that David Webb is intelligence incarnate, but the most important thing in life is not intelligence, but intelligence that is firmly wedded to integrity, as it clearly is in his case. Hong Kong would have been a much poorer place if he had not come to live and establish his presence here. Now we have many more decades of that. That comes from Bowen. Thank you very much indeed for that. Backchat@rthk.hk. David Webb, good morning to you.
Morning.
Thank you very much for joining us today. Echo the comments by there and the best wishes from Bowen for your health. What about that comment by the chief executive yesterday that the new legislation will be very effective in restoring business confidence and helping the local economy bounce back? Do you agree?
No, absolutely not. There's no rational connection between the two. The root causes of the protest movements, the 2 million people who came out peacefully calling, first of all, for the withdrawal of the extradition bill, but secondly, for democracy in Hong Kong, those issues have not gone away. There's still a gaping democracy deficit in Hong Kong. We have a legislature and chief executive elected by small circles, including the balance of power being held by corporate voters and tycoons. Unless meaningful steps are taken to resolve that and bring democratic accountability into the system so that people can say they don't like the policies but they voted for them and so they can change them by changing the people who are delivering those policies. Until we get that democratic accountability, I don't think unrest will go away, but I hope it won't be violent. I hope we can return to large-scale peaceful protests that we saw last June, on the 9th and the 16th of June last year, and that the government will start to respond to that, because they can, in fact, through local legislation in Hong Kong, abolish corporate voting. I tried to get a list of all the companies that voted in the 2016 or were registered to vote in the 2016 elections in order to start analysing the power base. And I was told that, but rather conveniently, when I asked for this at the end of last year, that the registers had been destroyed a month earlier. that they were no longer needed and therefore weren't available. And when I asked for the 2019 registers, they said, well, those aren't relevant to the next election because there'll be a new version before 2020 elections. So I was that was a freedom of information under the code on access to information. I requested that and was denied. And, you know, that's the root cause of our problems. And introducing new laws doesn't really solve it. And if you have to ask why now and why this, we already have laws against treason, sedition, rioting, 10 years in jail for that, and arson and so on. So there are adequate laws in Hong Kong to deal with the violent elements that participated last year. And those are being used there'd be huge numbers of prosecutions from it. So then what's the purpose of this new law? Well, clearly it must be to introduce new offences or broaden existing offences. So a wider definition of sedition, for example, most notably the fourth limb, which is a law against collusion with foreign influence. And that's probably the most alarming one, because does it mean that every time Anson Chan or Martin Lee visits Washington, that they are breaking the law in Hong Kong and they will be arrested on their return for colluding with foreign influence? We haven't seen the law yet, of course. There are posters all over Hong Kong urging people to support a law that nobody has seen. There's wacky announcements on TV saying, without a country, there is no family, which I simply don't understand. I mean, countries tend to interfere in families with things like the one-child policy and the hukou permits that prevent them migrating across the country, and the law against gay marriage and so on. Those are nationalistic interference in personal choice. So it's completely upside down. Of course, without the people, there is no country. It's the other way around. So the propaganda campaign to support this new law that nobody's yet seen, except possibly Tam Yu Chung, but then they took it away from him after he'd looked at it. I mean, what? It's a bizarre situation.
Okay.
Yes. David, what do you make of the fact, that the Hong Kong stock market is doing pretty well and that billions of dollars have pumped into buying up Hong Kong shares then?
Well, that's a separate entity, really. I mean, two-thirds of the stock market is mainland companies, and the value of those doesn't greatly vary according to what happens in Hong Kong, because they have tiny or non-existent business profiles in Hong Kong. The cost of money, the interest rates, have been squashed by the Federal Reserve printing huge amounts of new money to tackle COVID. They're buying up the U.S. government bonds and flattening out the interest rate curve, and that means that the expectation of the value of future earnings goes up as well. Mainland companies are busy issuing US dollar bonds at record low interest rates to finance themselves. So that's had a supportive effect on equity values, although I do think that some of the tech companies are very overvalued, and there'll be a day of reckoning on that because more and more money has gone into index funds to chase it. So, but basically, you can't treat the Hang Seng Index as a barometer of sentiment in Hong Kong or outlook for Hong Kong. The prospects for Hong Kong's economy are much more driven by local issues, the rate at which we could begin to welcome tourists from clean, COVID-clean countries like New Zealand back, for example, the extent to which we open our own border with the mainland and risk reinfection from the new outbreaks that are happening there, and ultimately the extent to which we can rejuvenate the economy by restoring or adding democratic accountability to the system so that people will accept the government that they've chosen. That's not happening, and it's unresolved.
Let's bring in Felix Chung now. Mr. Chung, good morning to you.
Good morning.
What difference do you think this law will make to the business environment in Hong Kong?
Up to now, the business sector in Hong Kong is very calm. They're just waiting for the details of the law. But there are two uncertainties, of course. One is, as I said, we're waiting for the detail of the national security law from the MPC. The other one is the response from the Western world, especially from the United States. Especially Donald Trump already announced that they will vote the Hong Kong Policy Act, which we have since 1992, what sort of sanctions is going to do. I mean, that sort of uncertainty that will affect the business sector in Hong Kong. But we would separate that into two different categories. The first one is the local business community. Right now, it seems that the local community do not mind too much about the national security law that's going to be imposed by the Beijing government. Part of the reason why is the local business community want to have a stable, a certain business environment, which we believe that, or they believe that, that will certainly help the stability in the local business, especially the social unrest or the violence happened again recently. So the local business sector really want to have a stable and certain environment. But the other category is the international business sector. For foreign investment, they, of course, will depends on the sanctions, whether the how bad is the sanction from the United States. So, but, you know, business sector is very, very realistic. When there is a market and there is business to do, even though the situation is getting worse, or is not as good as used to be, I mean, they still will come and will invest. I mean, Uber is a very good example. I mean, they understand, they make an announcement several weeks ago. They're going to move the Asian headquarters from Singapore to Hong Kong. They already know that there will be national security laws going to impose.
Yeah, but that's because they've sold their business in Singapore to Grab. They don't have a business in Singapore anymore. It's still illegal for them to operate in Hong Kong.
Well, of course. I mean, that's the business decisions. But why if they worry about Hong Kong, worry about the business environment in Hong Kong, worry about national security law, they have other choice. They might go to Taiwan.
I think
So that's part of the example. That might not be.
I think it says nothing, Felix, because Uber's drivers are mostly operating illegally because of the government's quota of taxi and hire car permits and the anti-competitive market that the government runs.
I mean, even if they think that it's right now it's illegal to run the business, still they come. Why do they want to come? Because there's a big market here.
No, because they need to have a regional headquarters.
Felix, when you are talking about the details of the national security law that the business community is calmly awaiting, you know, what sort of details would worry the business community? David Webb mentioned the part on collusion with foreign and external influences. Would that be a concern to you?
Well, as I said, we separate into two different categories. For the local business community, they don't care too much about that because they understand that they won't have any connections with foreign parties or whatever. They're just doing local business, right? So for international community, that might be different. So that's why I say I separate that into two different categories. The international one maybe have more concern about that, but the local business sector.
What the chief executive said was that it will actually improve the local business environment, that it will restore business confidence. Do you think that's true, Felix Chung? Because I think David Webb was suggesting that the underlying problems which caused the unrest haven't gone away, so you'd expect more unrest. Or do you think that with this new legislation, all the troublemakers will be in jail anyway, so it'll be peaceful and calm?
No, I think the troublemaker will still be here. It won't go away. I'm not sure whether that will really...
You don't think there'll be indefinite detention in secret locations?
Well, I'm not sure. But as I said...
It's amazing, isn't it, Felix, how many business groups have lined up to support this when they haven't even read it yet? I mean, all the major banks and Hongs, Jardines and so on have declared their support for a law that's not yet been read. It's amazing. I mean, in Hong Kong, we make laws in the open. If you're a legislative councillor yourself, you know that bills are drafted and published. And in China, it's all done behind closed doors.
I know, but you have to ask them. I'm not representing them. So I cannot representing them saying why they support that without seeing all the details.
Do you support the bill, Mr.
Sorry?
Do you support the bill?
I already declare
that... You haven't seen it?
Well, of course, of course. It will be much better if we can do it by ourselves under the Article 23, right? But unfortunately, the Hong Kong government doesn't have the ability or lose all the time to do it. So, I mean, so if it forced the central government to step in.
But doesn't that worry you that then they might use the same mechanism in Annex 3 of the Basic Law to pass laws on extradition, for example, which they could say is beyond the limits of the autonomy of the SAR because it involves people being extradited from the mainland? So,
put this way.
Could they do that?
The Beijing government could do whatever they want to do within the legal framework. Okay. But I don't think the Beijing government will really want to hurt Hong Kong. Beijing government won't hurt Hong Kong too much, but the American government may hurt Hong Kong. I mean, the American government right now, Donald Trump, is only targeting on his elections, presidential elections, right? He's only protecting his own interests, not protecting the interests of the Hong Kong people.
Do you think Beijing understands, though, that they are hurting Hong Kong, even if they don't intend to? Because you know, the all of the recent actions, including the national anthem law, say so. They don't seem to get that you can't command and order respect. You have to earn it.
Very simple legislations. I don't understand why people worry so much about
it. Well, then you don't understand the point, which is that the national anthem law orders people to respect the anthem rather than trying to earn their respect.
Why don't you respect your country? Why don't you respect your national anthem? I really don't understand.
Why do you need a law that jails you for 3 years for not respecting it? Shouldn't you have the freedom of choice?
So please respect it.
I mean, in the U.S., people are taking the knee at their anthem because they disagree with certain governmental policies, and now that's an acceptable form of protest. You've seen footballers all over the world kneeling during their anthems. Why can't people express their dissatisfaction?
But that's a choice, okay? Somebody can do whatever they want to do.
Without being jailed.
Responsible for their behavior.
But you support a law which says that they will be jailed if they do, for 3 years, for disrespecting the anthem.
Well, if you break the law...
You can't just say, if you break the law, therefore all laws are okay. I mean, why not have a law against walking down the street then, and if you break it, you'll be jailed? I mean, there has to be... Well, you're saying that if the law is the law and it doesn't matter what the law says, you should still be jailed for it. So you're saying that justifies the National Anthem Bill.
The National Anthem Bill is nothing special. It's not harmful. All right? So, I mean...
Well, it is if you want to satirize the anthem.
You can share opinion. Doesn't matter. I mean, you have your own opinion. You have your freedom of expressing whatever you want to say. But this is your own opinion. I'm so sorry.
As long as you don't mind being jailed for it, is that what you're saying? You're free to disrespect the anthem or satirize it, to parody it.
I respect the national anthem anyway.
All right, some emails. Backchat@rthk.hk is our email address. A couple addressed to Mr. Webb. Alonso, first of all, says, David Webb said there's been plenty of prosecutions against protesters under existing laws. Can he cite numbers? Media reports indicate that while there were thousands of arrests, most were subsequently released without charge and that very few have thus far been tried.
You can ask the Department of Justice for the figures that they've currently got, but there are hundreds underway. You have to prove offences beyond reasonable doubt, and simply arresting people for being in the wrong place at the wrong time doesn't rise to the standard of proof. So, of course, a large proportion of those arrested will be released and never charged. But there will be a lot of people facing charges for rioting, which carries a jail sentence of up to 10 years. If they can get video evidence of who they were and what they were doing, they'll be prosecuted. And frankly, they should be. That's what the law says. You know, we don't need violence as an element of protest in Hong Kong. We want people's rights to protest to be returned to them and not hidden behind the law that is currently being used, which is the public gathering regulation. which, by the way, doesn't have any legal standing now, because the chief executive can make those laws on her own, but only if there is a high probability of a large number of deaths. And that's simply not the case anymore. We didn't introduce regulations when there were 300 deaths from influenza last year. We've had 5 deaths so far, I think, from COVID. And we've had 0 transmissions locally for about 3 weeks now.
Okay.
So those laws no longer stand.
All right. Here's another one. This is from LK, who says, this is a question for David Webb. Climate change is a growing threat to Hong Kong and to other cities in the Pearl River Delta. Mm. The Delta is by definition low-lying. Low-lying cities are at high risk from rising sea levels, among other risks such as fresh water shortage. My question is, do you think discussing climate risks will be seen as a national security matter? Addressing climate change requires international cooperation, and because the role of government in setting policy is crucial, will criticism of current environmental policy be seen as criticism of the government?
Well, we'll have to see what the law says, but it does worry me that any form of interaction with foreign politicians not sanctioned by the Hong Kong government, by our legislators or other, even other people in the community with influence, could be seen as collusion with foreign forces. Depends, because you've had these ridiculous claims from both CY Leung and Carrie Lam that all of the protest movement was driven by foreign forces, never having produced any evidence of that. But if they can simply reduce it to a charge of visiting Washington DC and talking to congressmen, then you can certainly prove that. You can just get the photos that they were together and lock them up when they come back. There is a concern, I think, for business people as well, that what if their employees are pro-democracy and actively so on their private Facebook pages, but in publishing those opinions, then could they be forced, as Cathay Pacific was, to, when it fired its chief executive, basically, could they be forced to purge those people from their workforces? I mean, the CEO of Cathay was forced to resign over something one of his employees did. And that kind of fear, this sort of inverse McCarthyism, where if your employees don't all support the Communist Party, then you'll be in trouble. That's quite a risk for talent drain from Hong Kong.
Yeah, can I put that to Felix Cheung? What about that, Mr. Cheung? What about the situation, HSBC, HSBC being pressurised by CY Leung? Is that you might say that doesn't look like a very healthy business environment?
Well, I mean. Again, CY Leung can express whatever he wants to express. Whether HSBC the decision is because from CY Leung, I don't know, right? I mean, you have to ask the chairman of HSBC or the president of HSBC.
But CY Leung is a very important person in Hong Kong. He still is.
Yep, CPPCC vice chairman or something.
I mean, it's pretty obvious, isn't it? There is immense political pressure on businesses to express their publicly their support for this legislation.
Well, I mean, of course, he's an important person. But whether he's that influential, I'm not sure.
You don't agree? You don't think there is immense political pressure on companies to express support for this legislation?
No. No. HSBC,
you think companies are free to say no, we don't support this?
The interests of the corporations, rather than listen just to a person, whether he's really have the influences or not, I'm not sure. Mm. I mean, certainly the HSBC's calculations will be based on the interests of the corporations.
Okay, yeah, okay. Some more comments. This is from Jalal, who says, welcome back, David Webb. We wish him the best of health. Let's be real. The proposals for the new national security legislation are a catastrophe for Hong Kong. In the short term, it's created a huge amount of uncertainty. In the long term, this draconian law will be abused by our unaccountable government. That comes from Jalal. Jay says, Carrie Lam is a hypocrite. She and CY Leung were the cause of this problem by not listening to all the mushrooms. Then we are told these laws will help, but we have more worms coming out the woodwork. We need to employ David to assist Carrie with employing an intelligent government. Fortunately, David hasn't been nobbled. That comes from Jay, who also adds, many people who are educated in England 30, 40 years ago sing the national anthem in school and don't care about it. In Hong Kong, my child's school and many other schools play the Chinese national anthem. Kids learn it, they don't care, they don't think about it, but they know it. Now we have people making a big point of it just for a power ego trip. Many of the new generation in Hong Kong born, they're not allowed to be Chinese because their parents aren't. That comes from Jay. Felix Chung, thank you very much indeed for joining us this morning. Whitman Hong, MPC delegate, will be joining us. Deputy will be joining us with David Webb after the news at 9, so stick around. One more comment from Drake, who says, there are cases of the app being banned, on the mainland for releasing air pollution index. God only knows if they'll be charged with subversion, destabilizing the society, and picking quarrels. That is from Drake. Okay, more after the news at 9. Before that, the weather mainly fine and hot, apart from some isolated showers, with temperatures up to 32 degrees today, 30 degrees at the moment, and the relative humidity is at 78%. Welcome back. This is Bank Chat on a Tuesday morning with Ada Wong and me, Hugh Chiverton. We're talking about the national security legislation and business. We were joined by Felix Chung in the first part of the programme. Joining us now is Whitman Hong, Principal Liaison Officer with the Hong Kong Shenzhen Shanghai Authority and a deputy to the National People's Congress, along with our guest in, also in the first part, David Webb, shareholder activist, chief editor of website.com. If you want to contribute, please give us a call. Join the conversation, 233-88266. We'll put you on air. Or you can comment on our Facebook page, Backchat and RTHK Radio 3. Or you can send us an email and we'll do our best to read that out. Richard, thank you for your very interesting email about the border dispute between China and India, which we did talk a little bit about yesterday. I think I'll just maybe carry that over towards the end of the program today so we can stick with the main theme. On that topic, Mike in an email says, David, I couldn't have said it better myself. In fact, I have over the past few weeks. I find it somewhat humorous but sad that we focus so little on the idea of what kind of people are so insecure with their position of authority that they have to continue to kill chickens to scare monkeys. So if you can follow my logic, if it all goes wrong, we can blame Trump. GT says, one of my biggest worries is China pushing the law they have over the border for a legal requirement to everyone report every 24 hours the movement and location of every foreigner. If that happens in Hong Kong, there's going to be some serious trouble. Jay says, HSBC was supposed to be blackmailing their staff over jobs. Why is the ICAC not involved? That comes from Jay. Once again, backchat.rthk.hk is our email address. Whitman Hong, good morning to you.
Morning.
Thank you very much indeed for joining us. So we were saying at the beginning, the chief executive has said that this national security legislation will be very effective in restoring business confidence. You agree with that? And what gives you that? Why do you think that?
Yeah, I agree with that, first of all, and I've been, I just heard all your email and then what David just said a little bit. But from the business community that I run into, I've never heard anybody expressing that there will be a negative effect. In fact, a lot of people, especially if their business is in the retail business, in the hospitality business, people are praying to have a safe environment. Now, whether the new legislation really bring Hong Kong back to when it was very safe, one of the safest cities in the world, I do not know. But at least the business people are hoping that it will. And I've been also reading some of the surveys by the HGCC and by the MCHAM as well. So the GCC said a majority of respondents, which is, well, a little bit of over a majority, 61%, believe the law will either have a positive impact or no impact at all on their businesses over the long term. So I believe, you know, that could be...
How many said positive out of the 61?
I do not have the detailed figures.
Okay. So it could be a lot of them.
It could be just no impact. Yeah, true. So, and then also they asked... For the day-to-day operation, 25% of respondents expected law to have a negative impact. Now, that was actually quite a surprising result. But I can understand. I think one of the things that I just listened to, the emails that you just read to me, reporting foreigners in China every 24 hours, are we living in the 70s? And I do not recall there's a law that requiring that right now. So maybe when I was a kid... I heard about it. I do not know any foreigners then, but, you know,
Well, I don't think you need to have them reported. You just track their mobile phones and, you know, bug their hotel rooms.
Well, yeah, that happens in the US as well.
Chinese surveillance system is the greatest in the world, I believe.
Thank you for that. I take that as a compliment.
No, you shouldn't.
Well, it depends whether you're tracking the coronavirus or, you know, some other terrorists. And then he said, what kind of leader would be so afraid that to have a national security law? Well, to my knowledge, most of the countries, modern countries, that has laws, have a national security law, or more than one as well. So I do not know, maybe you should ask those leaders why are they afraid.
Well, Carrie Lam and the Hong Kong SAR government has a majority operating in LegCo of pro-Beijing legislators. Why didn't she table during her term legislation on Article 23? It seems to have caught her by surprise that the government suddenly stepped in the mainland and said, we're taking it out of your hands. She hasn't seen it. The Secretary of Justice hasn't seen it. You can tell from their comments that they're not sure what's in it. And basically they've been bypassed because she did not table a bill in the normal way and put it back to LegCo 17 years after it was last tried.
Well, first of all, this new national security law is different from Article 23 in terms of scope, in terms of, you know, the target that they are aiming at. There's some overlap.
How is it different in scope? I mean, it's broader or narrower?
No, it's just different. For example, in Article 23, there's like leaking of confidential information, national confidential information. It's not in this new law. Okay? This new law talk about terrorism, terror activities, which was not included in 23. Okay, we don't have time to go through detail, but
she could have tabled laws on terrorism if there was a need for that.
If you Google it, you can find there's plenty of slides on the web that tells you the difference between the two.
Why didn't the Hong Kong government table the necessary legislation on whatever subjects?
Well, you're asking the wrong person because I do not represent the Hong Kong government. But I can tell you from what I heard from the Mr. Wang Chen when he tabled the first decision, because I was in the floor, the decision to order the standing committee to actually create this law. It says very clearly that yes, there was a Article 23 in the basic law, and the for whatever reason it didn't specify what kind of reason. There has been a lot of negative. I don't know how to translate it exactly in English, but names, in terms of fear, in terms of other things for the Article 23 and make it impractical right now to pass the Article 23. So
even with a working majority in LegCo. I mean, is
that was
have we
that
reached
was,
the point where the government can't pass laws that the majority of LegCo supports.
Well, first of all for Article 23, you cannot win it by just a simple majority, I think.
Sure you can. It's the government shall pass legislation. It's a majority, simple majority. It's not amending the basic law.
The reason given by, certainly by the current administration, by Carrie Lam, and I'm not quite sure what the explanation was with previous administrations, including CY Leung, but Carrie Lam says the environment is not there.
Yeah, they've all said it's not the right time. It should be done.
Right time. Doesn't that mean that there is not public support? It's the public discontent. It's the public disquiet which was the cause of not introducing.
Well, you're asking the wrong person because I can't explain why she said that. If you ask my personal opinion, yes, there had been a lot of public discontent for this and that, but there have been also a lot of different forces, including geopolitical forces, that are affecting the current political environment in Hong Kong. Okay.
Yes,
but if you're talking about discontent over Article 23, then that's been there since 2003, hasn't it?
Yes, and it has been. You know, it's not just discontent. It's about, you know, it's in fact a wrong. I don't know. Wrong is probably not the right word, but there has been a perception, okay, that people have created over the years by creating fear,
okay,
by lying,
right,
by creating things that was not there and inventing a daemon that, you know, out of the blue.
Okay. Okay, that might be true, but I think what you're saying would apply to the majority of people in Hong Kong, because every poll, every election, every, you know, survey has suggested that most people in Hong Kong support the Democrats. So you're saying that for 20 years, most people in Hong Kong have been wrong?
I'm not saying that. I'm just saying there is a wrong perception.
Okay.
On the
most
on
people the, in Hong Kong for 20 years have had a wrong perception. When
they on see, Article 23, yes.
When they see that even during this secretive drafting process, the NPC's resolution called for making it illegal for foreigners to interfere in Hong Kong affairs. That's already been changed to making it illegal for Hong Kong people to collude with foreigners. Don't people have reasonable fear that that the scope has been widening, and don't you think if you put it to a public opinion poll or a referendum, there would be a huge vote against making it illegal to talk to foreign politicians?
I'm not sure if you what you just
I mean,
described
isn't it important
is,
to have dialogue between our politicians and legislators and for overseas ones as
I,
part
I'm
of the international
I'm sure there
community?
Was a lot of dialogue. I mean, dialogue is one thing. Colluding with a foreign government to overthrow your own government is another thing. Okay, I was in kindergarten, that was called treason.
We already have laws against treason and sedition in the Crimes Ordinance. We don't need this law.
I agree with you, but I don't know why it was not.
You agree
not
that we don't need this law because we've already got laws against it?
If it can be an act.
It's already in the Crimes Ordinance.
Every time when those laws were put back on the table, you hear the. I don't like to use the word pro-Democrats because they are not. Okay, the opposition parties will say, oh, these are very old laws. They shouldn't be there.
Well, there's an old law against theft and it's still there. What's wrong with being old?
Tell Tanya. Don't it's tell still, me, okay? Yeah. I'm not a legislator in Hong Kong.
The laws are already there. They're on the books and they are being
they
used.
They should have been used.
There was a defence charge brought last year, a sedition, I believe. So there's already
At what the legislator said about it. They said, oh, you shouldn't. It's a law in the coffin you're digging up from the grave.
All right, some comments from listeners. I've got quite a few emails coming in. A common thread is the issue of kind of the secrecy associated with this bill, which perhaps we'll get to in just a moment. First of all, Matthew, responding to Felix Chung in the first part, says, Felix, your party represents the business sector. The business community has chosen to support the CCP in support of its own self-interest, but now, ironically, it seems the consequences of having done that is that Hong Kong's unique business advantage will be destroyed. How can you say you support the bill without having seen it? You are not standing up either for regular Hong Kong people or the businesses you represent. You sound completely neutered. Paul in Taipo says, I disagree with David Webb. A few weeks ago, I didn't care much for any national anthems. But thanks to the new national anthem law, I now think ours is really great. What a super law. That comes from Paul, who may be being ironic. Matt says, David Webb is on fire this morning. It's such a shame that reasoned and logical arguments like his are simply not addressed by CCP supporters. The CCP have grown used to governing without supervision and scrutiny. The situation will be extremely problematic to change. That comes from Matt. Professor Carol Peterson says, I really cannot understand why the central government is refusing to publish a draft of the law before bringing it into force. In this regard, it's behaving even more foolishly than Tung's government behaved in 2003. Had Tung's administration agreed before the protest march of the 1st of July to make some very reasonable amendments proposed by legislators, then the protest march would have been far smaller and the Liberal Party probably would not have withdrawn its support. Even unelected governments generally figure out that a government needs to be consultative if it wants to build trust and to promote reconciliation. Martin says, David Webb is a true advocate for Hong Kong's free and open society, economy and business. Compare and contrast the bizarre approach to the introduction of the national security law, which is in secret and which will be passed by the MPCSC without further scrutiny. Shows how the communists and its followers in Hong Kong are so dense as to dismiss the understandable concerns of Hong Kong's civilized, sophisticated and technology advanced society. It shows that communism is an outdated system of fear that should be consigned to the dustbin. And Drake says the Japanese are lobbying fund managers to relocate here. What is the possibility? Thank you very much indeed for those comments. Backchat@rthk.hk. Whitman Hong, what about that question of the secrecy associated with this legislation? That
seems to be on many people's minds. First of all, I I do not understand the accusation. It has not been passed. Okay, it has been go through once with the standing committee, I think. I did not see it put to vote. There was a consultative sessions, of course. Right now, it's a mainland, you know, it's a central government process, and their process in the past also they have consultative on, you know, the processes. I do not know when it will publish, but at least now saying that it won't before the voting, I think it's a bit too early.
I thought they were going to release it to celebrate the SAR anniversary on the 1st of July. Apparently, they want to release it
Whitman, that there's Tuesday. Normally a 30-day consultation period, and according to Tam Yu Chong, the mainland authorities will not adhere to that 30-day consultation period anymore. So they are quite determined to endorse the law, as we have heard, slashing the time for public discussion. Why is there such a rush?
Well, I think first of all is they see there's an urgency. Okay. Well, I do not have all the information they have, but there is an urgency. Okay. Whether it's what happened last year will come back again. I don't know whether there is evidence that foreign governments is getting really into our Hong Kong local situation.
This law probably does nothing to stop that. I mean, we've heard that the sentences will be between 3 and 10 years in jail. Well, rioters can already be jailed for 10 years.
Different. Jail people for arson, for hitting people, but it's very hard to prove whatever was provided funding at the back.
Okay. So you're pointing to the provisions on collusion, that those might carry 10-year jail terms as well. I mean, maybe that's the new element that's being introduced.
I don't know. I haven't seen the law myself.
That would really deter people like Martin Lee from visiting Washington. He's an old man and very well respected in the international community, and if he gets jailed for 10 years, he'll be a national hero, won't he?
Mr. Hong, it's really fair to say, isn't it, that this is done with a great deal of secrecy. Nobody in Hong Kong has seen, I mean, possibly Tam Yu Chong, has seen this law, and it's going to be enacted, it's expected, very, very soon, within a week or so. That's very unusual. Why is that being done?
Well, number one, I guess you're asking the wrong person because I didn't make that decision.
Well, you're an NPC deputy,
Yes.
Yeah,
so,
but they have no power, don't you understand, Hugh?
We have submitted, including myself, suggestions about how the law should be made. Okay, this process has been done a few weeks back, once we were back. Now, we have agreed not to disclose those suggestions so that we do not want to use like external or press kind of
public pressure
you know to affect the
Why
way
not?
The
aren't
because
you,
this is national security.
Yes,
okay.
But aren't you
a maybe you know
of,
a lot about
of Hong Kong to the National People's Congress. Shouldn't you speak for Hong Kong?
I did, and tell
us what you told them.
Well, I promised I didn't, so I wouldn't, so I probably would refrain from doing that. But I can tell
The NPC in Hong Kong doesn't even have a website for people in the public domain to send in comments to the delegates like you.
We have been talking about, you know, creating an office, a secretariat, okay? But there were fears that that this may create a negative impact on the current administration of Hong Kong SAR.
You know, just objectively, that's quite odd, isn't it, that you are representing you say you're representing the people of Hong Kong, but you can't say what you said to the people of Hong Kong.
Well, as I said, this is about national security, okay? To me, that is, number one, I'm not a professional in that. I'm not sure if Mr. Webb is. I hope he's not, but, you know, there are things that we, even as a legislator, may not fully understand. Okay, I think this applies to any country. When it comes to national security, when it comes to, you know, this kind of activities, how do you, for example, investigate cases like these?
Do you think that people will be extradited in severe cases and to face charges in the mainland under this?
From what I heard from Tam Yu Chung and also subsequently there were some press, they said in very, you know, specific cases. I do not know how do you define it. I suspect you should define it. You know, what kind of what kind of cases you should call it specific cases in any law. But, you know, I can only imagine...
They'll be put on the high-speed train to China and tried in the mainland.
No, the law said, from what I read from the press, okay, that the trials will be done in Hong Kong using Hong Kong judges, okay?
Carefully and, selected.
Well...
By the chief executive. We've heard that much, I think.
Yes, yes. And I think that's a fair thing to do because I've...
The Chief Justice chooses judges to hear cases normally. The judiciary handles the allocation of cases, not the Chief Executive. The Chief Executive is actually on the side of the prosecution. She has a Department of Justice prosecuting.
If you read the basic law, I'm sure you did, the Chief Executive is both the head of administration but also the head of the whole SAR.
Oh, now we're going to this.
Okay, so she actually appointed the Chief Justice as well.
No.
She does.
She has to propose him to LegCo for approval. The Chief Justice has just been approved by Legislative
Council. Yeah, but it's still appointed by her.
She doesn't have the outright right of appointment. And cases are allocated amongst judges by the judiciary to preserve independence from the Department of Justice, which is prosecuting. You can't have people in charge of both the prosecution and picking the judges.
Yeah,
but David Ware, can I put it to you that, you know, all around the world, you have special arrangements for national security. When you're dealing with national security, it's different. It's different from the usual process, both in the way it operates, the way it's enforced, and the laws themselves. You have denotices, and you have all kinds of considerations. You have you have secrets
and basically. You have judicial independence and rule of law and proper processes, and in Hong Kong's case we have one country, two systems, which will be violated if we start extraditing people in so-called special cases to be tried in the mainland. That was what the whole extradition bill was all about. And it was withdrawn from LegCo after the huge opposition to it. And, you know, we need to have laws against treason and sedition, and we do have those.
If it's a matter of national security, then there may be reasons to conduct the trial in the mainland. Just as in Spain, when there are problems in Barcelona, then some issues will be tried not in Barcelona, but will be tried in Madrid by the central authorities rather than a breakaway republic.
No, because under the one country, two systems framework, Hong Kong has the right of judicial determination. And there may be occasions when they close the door of the court to hear evidence that the judge is convinced involves national security and can't be heard in public. Very rare for that to happen. It happens sometimes in the UK as well when you're charging a terrorist with a crime and somebody from MI6 needs to give evidence, for example, and then they are anonymized and so forth. But that still happens within the legal framework of the UK. And in Hong Kong's case, we were promised judicial autonomy in the Basic Law and the Joint Declaration. And just on that, before we run out of time, I am delighted that the UK is finally willing, given that they regard, if this law is enacted by the mainland, they regard that as a breach of the treaty. They're basically saying, well, in that case, we will do something we promised not to do before, which is to virtually extend the right of abode to B&O passport holders. They can come to the UK for 12 months, they can work, they can go through the processes to become citizens, and then, of course, their children could become citizens after that. There's already a brain drain underway anyway of people who can see the writing on the wall, young graduates who are thinking they'd rather train overseas. They might not be practicing Hong Kong law after 2047 if they're training in law. That brain drain is already happening. But if countries, in reaction to this national security law, start opening their immigration doors to the talent of Hong Kong, that, if nothing else, ought to put pressure on the mainland to think again. Because if the talent drains away, then what is Hong Kong? Are they going to?
Is there really a
brain
drain?
Are they going to replace it?
Whitman Hung, have you seen real signs of a brain drain?
I have seen real signs of brain drain, but the reasons could, you know, one of it could be what Mr. Webb just said, but I've heard other reasons. Okay, a friend of mine teaches in the Chinese University, which is my where I graduated from as well. A lot of his students is leaving Hong Kong for Singapore or mainland because they do not want to study in the university anymore because they're afraid they couldn't find a job. Because there's the name of Chinese university being called the whatever violence university, which I'm very sad about. So, you know, and this kind of brain drain. But what I want to answer to Mr. Webb's question is, first of all, there are countries who welcome immigrants from Hong Kong from day one. Okay, Australia, Canada, there's a lot of countries. UK was not one of them. Okay, now there will be one more. I think when a person decides where they want to move, where they want to work after graduation, and where they want to move their family, there's a lot of consideration. Legal environment would be one. You know, employment market would be one. The culture would be one. Environment, you know, the air pollution. There's a lot of consideration.
Yeah, but you could imagine that if young graduates and workers feel they're going to start being vetted for their political views before they can join the civil service, for example, because of the new dual loyalty to Beijing and Hong Kong.
Yeah, but that's the fear that you're painting out of the blue. Because that's, loyalty to the People's Republic of China and the Constitution and the basic law. I think that is, you know, perfectly, you know, right to ask, but you're painting a lot of fears that doesn't exist. You know, let me tell you this. When we have people from France, from Spain, from, you know, UK and America coming to Hong Kong for businesses in the past, okay, I've met a lot of people from Europe, actually, a lot of people. I don't know why, but there was, in the past few years, there's a lot of European coming to Hong Kong in my field, which is IT. Okay, and they're doing startups here because they want to go to the mainland, you know, go to the mainland China market, but they rather live in Hong Kong because they love it here. For what, you know, I don't know, was because of the bars or because of something else, but you know, and I'm seeing people coming. And again, another thing is, but at the same time, there are about 700 to 800 foreigners living, you know, in mainland China. There's 1 million foreign investor companies in mainland China that has a national security law that has been under the CCP for a very long time. So if you're saying, oh, people will flee the city because of that, then why are those people not fleeing from mainland China?
Okay, some more comments to finish off. Bowen says, Whitman Hung is quite wrong to say that the government cannot pass Article 23 legislation in LegCo with a simple majority. He's mixed it up with, for example, trying to change composition of LegCo or the method of electing the CE, which require a two-thirds majority. The argument that the CPG now needs to pass national security legislation for Hong Kong because the SAR government could not have done it is specious. They could have done it for a long time. What held them back was just that not having a convincing plan and arguments, they knew ramming it through LegCo with the support of the pro-establishment camp would wipe out the pro-establishment camp politically. In any case, if the SAR government had the audacity to ram something like the extradition bill through LegCo, it's extremely difficult to excuse it from not having to attempt it. The same thing with Article 23 legislation that comes from Bowen. Drake says, former Chief Justice, the Honourable Andrew Lee, just said that having the Chief Executive to pick judges is not proper. JR says, Carrie has finally shown her worth, floundering almost from day one to actually make a decision and create real policies, etc. She's finally comfortable in her role, a product of a career in which you advance by not doing anything and waiting for a committee to make a decision. Carrie has now made a decision by the ultimate committee and higher power handing down a policy. As for the question posed by David Webb earlier about why hasn't Carrie tabled security law herself, I assume that to be a rhetorical question. See what I just wrote above. In addition, the fact that trying to table any law which essentially would replicate Article 23 or part of it would have no chance due to the opposition to it. Jay says, if the chief executive chooses judges educated in Chinese law and not Hong Kong Western law, so we're screwed. Drake says, most of the countries with national security laws also have democracy and good track records of judicial independence. GT says, as a foreigner with permanent ID in Hong Kong and I go and speak to some of my friends in UK or US government, does that make me guilty of collusion even though I'm not officially a citizen of China or Hong Kong? This is so confusing. That comes from GT. And Jay says, if you live in China, you're supposed to register with a local police station, I presume, if you're, you know, if you're a foreigner. Part of this is that the police can keep an eye on you from a safety point of view. Other points depend on what type of business you're doing, legal or illegal, because if people don't have work permits, they are illegal. This is job creation paperwork. But we don't hear of foreigners involved in terrorism in China, and we've not heard of terrorism in Hong Kong either. So why has Hong Kong become the capital terror place of the world is beyond me. Thank you very much indeed for all those emails and all those comments. Just a couple more here, just squeeze in. Peter M. says, Whitman accuses others of having false perceptions about an Article 23 law and even lying about it in the past, yet he blithely denies that there is any secrecy over the national security law, even though it's directed at Hong Kong and the Hong Kong population has not been given and may not be given sight of the bill before it's passed. Is that his interpretation of being intellectually honest? And Alan says, repeatedly the statement is made that all existing rules and laws must be broken or ignored, judicial independence overridden because of national security. Why most of Hong Kong opposes this law is that we know that this will not be used to protect national security, but to repress local political opposition. Hong Kong people simply want the basic rights and respect that were promised to them. That comes from Alan. As I say, thank you very much indeed. Thank you to our guests this morning, to Whitman Hung, a deputy to the National People's Congress, principal liaison office of the Hong Kong Shenzhen Shanghai Authority, and to David Webb. Best of luck to you, David Webb, chief editor of website.com. Finally, as mentioned, just that email from Peter on the border dispute between China and India. I'll have to edit this a little bit for length. Peter says the British forgery of the McMahon line and its endorsement by the US in 1962 lies at the heart of India and China's border dispute. The McMahon line, drawn at the behest of the British Raj in 1914, has been adopted by the Indian government as the definitive statement of its border with China in the northeast, although the line has never been accepted by any Chinese government. Maps drawn by McMahon were left unpublished for decades. The McMahon lines first appeared in 1937, 23 years after McMahon drew it. There's some more detail there. Peter concludes, as usual, the US has a strong interest in keeping the Indian-Chinese tension alive and prevent any settlement of the border dispute. Thank you very much indeed, Ada. Many thanks to you. We'll be back at 8:30 tomorrow, leaving you now with the latest weather. Mainly fine and hot, apart from some isolated showers. Maximum temperature today, about 32 degrees in the urban areas, a bit warmer than New Territories. And the outlook is going to be hot for the rest of the week and a few showers from Wednesday to Friday. 30 degrees at the moment. The relative humidity is at 76%.